Hello, listeners. I just wanted to warn you that our guest for this episode, Frank Driscoll, was unfortunately having connection problems, and we had a whole bunch of messy audio from him. I did my best to try to clean it up. We wanted to make sure that we released this episode because we love Frank on I Used to Like This One. I just wanted to warn our listeners, though, that some of his audio can be pretty hard to listen to at times. Hopefully you just bear with us. Anyway, enjoy the show.
The date is May 11th, 1994, and we're watching The Crow. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Officer Albrecht. To my Eric Draven.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
And this week, we forge ahead on Halloween-type movies, and we brought back the host of one of Colin and my favorite short form podcasts, Mr. Frank Driscoll. Welcome back, Frank.
Welcome, Frank.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you, Colin. I love doing this show. I just want to say that. And anytime I get the opportunity to come back, I stop whatever the heck I'm doing and come right back. So thanks again for inviting me on this great show again.
And we get to have a pattern going that you haven't seen a movie, you have seen a movie, you haven't seen a movie. That means that, you know, when you come back for a fourth time, it'll have to be one of your favorites again.
I know Frank's also, like, he's going to become our expert on, like, the non-mainstream comic book film movies.
Yeah, the emo,
yeah,
non-canon.
The emo gothic comic book movies.
Fringe comic book movies, yeah.
Yes. I am slowly becoming gothic as we speak.
You're listening to My Chemical Romance. Wearing black eyeliner for some reason. Yeah, I see that happening. So this week we're looking back at May 1994, when the movies in theaters were When a Man Loves a Woman, Serial Mom, With Honors, Bad Girls, and of course our movie for today, The Crow, which earned $94 million on a $23 million budget.
And as always, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, well, I do have five total here. First is, it can't rain all the time.
I mean, that's a nice one. It's a nice callback to the movie itself.
Yeah.
Number two, real love is forever.
Yeah,
okay. Next up we have Believe in Angels.
I don't get that one.
Okay, yeah. Fourth, I've got Darker Than the Bat. And I want to note that Batman Returns was in 1992 and Batman Forever was in 1995. So this is sandwiched in between the two of them. So it's not like they're doing some sort of cheeky Batman is in theaters right now thing with it. So, but I... Batman is the only place that tagline goes in my head.
Yeah. And they're not really, I mean, I guess aside from being comic book adaptations, but I like The Crow and Batman are nothing alike in my opinion.
No. I mean, except for the revenge side of things, but, you know. Well, okay, finally, last tagline, in a world without justice, one man is chosen to protect the innocent.
Technically, yes.
Yeah.
I feel like that could be a tagline for many, many movies, but not necessarily this one.
Well, any comic book movie for sure. I mean, that's Zack Snyder's Justice League right there. In a world without justice, one man is chosen to protect the innocent. It's just not clear which man that is in something like Justice League.
Yeah.
Or woman.
Or woman, yes. Well,
hashtag woke. Okay, but those may not be the best descriptions of this movie. So let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
It was very, like, I found it very hard to do a 60-second synopsis for this movie just because I feel like it's so straightforward.
Yeah.
It was really hard to, it was really hard to inject any life into it.
Any zhuzh?
Yeah. Any savoir-faire, whatever you like. So, I tried my best, but we'll see.
Okay.
On the one-year anniversary of his own murder, rock star Eric Draven rides back to the land of the living on the wings of a mystical crow. After painting his face and suiting up in black leather, Eric hits the streets to take his revenge on the men who not only killed him, but his beloved Shelley. Will Eric find a new and more imaginative way to kill each and every one of his foes with an ever-increasing passion for violence? Let's find out on another episode of... I used to like this one. That was probably like a 20-second synopsis.
Yeah, that's probably the shortest one you've had so far is what I thought, yeah. Yeah, so more than anything, I mean, I definitely remember the hype around this film when it first came out because of the Brandon Lee tragedy on set. Now, I mean, I mentioned in the beginning, I touched on it, that Frank has never seen this movie, but... You must have known the news around this movie at the very least, I'm guessing, Frank. Is that, am I right in assuming that?
Yes. Yes, I did. I knew that Brandon Lee's unfortunate and untimely death occurred while filming. And I knew it was a freak accident involving a blank gun. And I can't remember when I heard, but I think I read about it somewhere. I think it was like a People magazine special issue about celebrities who we lost sooner than we should have. And there was a whole thing about Brandon Lee. And that's how I found out he was Bruce Lee's son and everything else. And I even, my brother has never heard of this movie either. And when I told him that I was doing it, he looked it up and he saw how cool Brandon Lee looked. And I told him that that was Bruce Lee's son. And I told him that, well, unfortunately, he died while making it. And that tripped him out.
Yeah.
And so it's just very unfortunate. And I did, unfortunately, know about it. And that's really all I knew about the movie coming in.
Yeah, and something that I always thought is a great companion piece to The Crow is to watch Dragon, the Bruce Lee story. Because it's just, I know that when I first watched this movie when I was younger, you know, it made me want to do a Bruce Lee deep dive. After watching this movie, that's what got me into, like, a time period where I went through Enter the Dragon and all of Bruce Lee's catalog and the biopic on Bruce Lee as well. So you really did know, like, literally nothing, though, going into this movie?
About the movie, no.
Okay, okay. Colin, what about you? What kind of experience do you have with The Crow?
So I remember hearing about the Brandon Lee incident probably like around the time that it happened, like just seeing it on the news as a kid. But I didn't watch The Crow until I was like, definitely I was in university, so I would have been my early to like mid 20s, and I watched it for the first time.
Okay.
And I remember loving it so much. I was just going through, at that time I was going through a lot of comic book inspired movies that were like outside of the DC Marvel era. I think it was around the time that like 300 came out, and I was kind of turned on to more indie comics and indie and the movies that were based on them.
Okay.
And so yeah, that's when I watched the Crow for the first time, and I thought it was awesome. And then I remember I was really into it for a while, so I got the comic book and I read the comic book, and it was great as well. But that's really about it. It's just kind of always been one of those movies I liked. And I mean, I was a big, like, I'm a big wrestling fan. So I remember, like, back in the day, WCW, Sting. That was actually probably how I first heard about The Crow.
Was because I love... kind of a Crow ripoff.
Yeah, I loved Sting. Sting was the only wrestler that I really liked that really drew my attention in WCW. And it was because he, like, basically ripped off The Crow and took the face paint and everything and took that kind of...
Yeah.
Character on, so that's really my only experience with The Crow.
I did read that that's not the only thing that ripped off The Crow. Heath Ledger's makeup in The Dark Knight was also inspired by The Crow.
Oh yeah, for sure. You could see. The other weird thing is, like, I find that Brandon Lee looks so much like Jared Leto that there were times where I was like, is this Jared Leto? And then But yeah, his makeup, there's a few times, especially like when he's in the back seat of that car when he kills, I think, the third goon there, and he has the gun, where I was just like, he looks exactly like Heath Ledger's Joker. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, there is one moment in the movie where I think he looked so much like Bruce Lee, and that's when he's sitting on the table and he goes, "I just want him," when he's talking to, oh, I forget which guy that is, but yeah, it's just mm-hmm. something about how he says, "I just want him," is, it just reminds me so much of Bruce Lee. But yeah, I mean, this movie is one of those that I know this is believed to be one of the reasons why gun rules in movies were changed. There's certain things you're not supposed to do now. You're not supposed to point a gun at anyone on screen. They have to hide that with the camera angles they use and things like that. I mean, Colin and I even experienced that because the show we did together, they had a real gun or two real guns for that show. And so even mm-hmm. though the firing pins were removed and things were blocked up and welded shut and all this sort of stuff, we had very specific rules we were supposed to follow with these firearms in the show. And, you know, it's just, part of that is because of this movie.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was wild. Like, I was reading the Wikipedia about, like, kind of all the things that happened. Yeah, I don't know if you're, there's like that Malcolm Gladwell book, I think, that talks about like airplane pilots and how like when a plane crashes, it's not just like one massive thing goes wrong. It's like thing after thing after thing goes wrong or unchecked or nobody says anything. And that's kind of like the case that happened with this. Like, it's just a freak thing. Like, they changed the bullets from these like basically deactivated bullets into the blank rounds, but a piece of one of the deactivated ones had get stuck in the barrel, and like, and then it just so happened that the person who's like the gun master on set that day wasn't there, so this like assistant was in charge of looking after and forgot to take care of some stuff. It's just wild that like all these errors just ultimately led to someone's death.
Well, I also read that this was like a cursed movie set.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because there was a carpenter that suffered serious burns to his upper body on the first day. There was a worker that impaled his hand with a screwdriver. There was an equipment truck that caught fire. There was a stuntman that broke several ribs falling through the ceiling. There was a rigger that was severely electrocuted. A disgruntled set sculptor went berserk and drove his car through the prop room. A hurricane destroyed several of the sets, and they just kind of blame it all on corner cutting and long hours because, you know, someone was quoted as saying they were trying to make a $30 million movie on an $18 million budget. Like, the neighboring studio actually heard about all the mishaps and, like, started a pool on when the production was going to be shut down. And then they had a fire on their own lot that burnt several of their sets. So it's like the curse jumped over to this other studio.
Yeah. Oh.
So now, for me, I mean, I was saving kind of my experience with The Crow for last, because this is a movie that I did love when I was younger, but I have actually touched set pieces from The Crow.
Really?
Oh, wow.
That is my story, yeah. A friend of mine and I went down on a road trip to Los Angeles and stayed with a guy that she knew somehow, and he did special effects for movies. And so, as you can probably tell in this movie, most of the sets are miniatures. And so I actually, if I can find them, I've got pictures of some of these set pieces, but it's like I've touched some of those buildings. And so that's my claim to fame with The Crow.
Wow.
I've also touched the Pillsbury Doughboy.
So
and he's solid. He's hard and heavy, but here we go. Let's jump into The Crow. It's directed by Alex Proyas, who was a commercial and music video director. He also directed iRobot. This was his first theatrical film. Originally, he wanted to film it in black and white, which is probably why he settled on this saturated Zack Snyder-esque look, you know, especially with the Crow vision.
Mm-hmm.
But I also read that originally, the studio was trying to get him to make it a musical starring Michael Jackson. And he just laughed it off and then realized that they were serious. He's like, no. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, I can't. I'm just like, man, wow. That would have been something. That would have been really something to see. I don't know if it would have been something good, but it would have been something.
I mean, other alternate castings for Eric Draven, River Phoenix and Christian Slater turned down the role, and the writer wanted Johnny Depp.
Yeah, okay, obviously.
Yeah, so, but Michael Jackson is the most batshit crazy one that I can think of. Or is it? Huh, I don't know.
I'm trying to imagine it now. I can just see him in a gunfight doing all the weird popping and locking. I can just see
it. Moonwalks across the table on his way out, yeah. Movie's produced by Jeff Most and Edward R. Pressman, and it's written by James O'Barr, who created the comic book series, and as such, his IMDb credits are almost exclusively Crow properties. It's also written by David J. Shaw, who has a lot of horror-type stuff, and John Shirley, who has a lot of action and cartoon stuff. So that's kind of the blend of writers that you have on this picture. And we open up the movie October 30th. It's Devil's Night, and there's fires burning and some great miniature work going on. There's all the miniatures that I got to take pictures of right there. So with this being your first viewing, what did you think of the opening, the premise, the idea of Detroit burning? Frank, what did you think of that?
Well, you know, I could tell that definitely this film was from the early 90s when CGI wasn't fully enabled. I mean, me being the kind of person that went to school and learned about little things in TV and movies, you could see that fire's not real, that fire's not real, that one.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But, but yeah, that's the crow flying in kind of looked a bit funny to me. But still, I can imagine watching it in 1993 going, ugh, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because people start to realize that. You know, it kind of reminded me of Blade. A little bit, kind of.
Yeah.
In terms of the darkness. But, I mean, I saw it as its own thing. And I thought it looked cool, you know, with the crow flying in and all the fire and all that stuff. You can just imagine it.
Yeah. Yeah. The one thing that surprises me is I read that a lot of the car chase to save money was done with miniatures. And that fooled me. Because I even knew that watching it. And I'm like, I do not see miniatures happening here. But, like, you're absolutely right. Like, the swooping of the city, it's, like, it's clearly not real. But, yeah, the car chase, that one threw me off. It's like, really? What part of the car chase?
Now that you mention it, I don't think I could have seen that either. It looked pretty real to me.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought that at all.
Yeah.
I did. I thought that the opening to me, like, I had read that this movie was originally, it was going to be a made-for-TV movie.
Oh,
like
okay.
And then like I think it was Paramount. They were going to distribute, and then they were going to do it for TV or for theaters. But then after Brandon Lee died, they didn't want to do it anymore, and Miramax came into the fold and took it and gave it a theatrical release. But originally, it was just going to be a made-for-TV movie, and I kind of thought that the way it opens, it kind of seemed TV-ish to me with the. Yeah. Voiceover of everything and the crow flying over the city. It just seemed, but it's also very 90s as well, I guess, too. But looking at it with like today's eyes, it seems more TV than big screen.
Well, one of the things that I read about that particular voiceover is a big reason for that existing is because they had to do rewrites on the script to cover his absence. And so that's how they kind of tied it together better. Like, I'd be interested to see the original script because I, you know, in a very Blade Runner way, I don't think the original was supposed to have a voiceover, you know?
Yeah. So. I read, like, the scenes that he had left to film were the scenes that had to do with the initial, like, the murder, basically, when the scene where he gets killed is, like, when he comes through the door and, like, finds the gang of guys there, like, raping Shelley and that kind of stuff. And so what they had left to film was more of that. And so, I mean, they flash back to it, obviously, throughout the movie. But I did wonder if maybe that was going to be like more fully realized in like at the beginning of the movie, because for what they do have, it might have just been the stunt double, because you really don't see him. You don't really see his face all that much when they show the little bits of him getting killed.
Yeah, I did read a list of a lot of the shots that were completed without him. Most of them are ones where you don't see his face. And so, like, when... what's the little kid's name? Sarah. When Sarah comes looking for him in his apartment for the first time, you never see his face in that scene because, you know, that was all done with a body double. There is the part where he shatters the mirror, and the reflection in the mirror is digitally put in, and all the makeup being put on is by a body double as well. That was another one. And then there were a few others, but I think you're right that some of that flashback scene, yes. And it could have been, I mean, we joked back when we did Twister and when we did Arachnophobia. I mean, just recently, we joked that they were revenge stories. But, I mean, this one is unapologetically a revenge story. And just like Twister taking Joe's dad in the beginning of that movie, you're right. That is possibly how this movie could have just opened, was with the whole reason for revenge and having a fully fleshed out scene instead of having to do it as, you know, flashbacks throughout.
Well, yeah, because I kind of wondered if maybe, like, Shelley, from what I could, is basically, like, almost a non-speaking role.
Yeah.
Which I find very strange for that character, because she's the motivation ultimately. And so I did wonder if maybe one of the reasons for that was because like her story played more into those scenes that he ultimately wasn't able to be in, which would have been those scenes that would have set up like the life that they had together and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, Cameron Diaz was actually approached to play Shelley, but she turned it down because she didn't like the script. So so there's a non-speaking role that could have had a much bigger start, because I don't even know who this Sophia Shinass is. Like, I can't place her in anything else. I didn't really look through her IMDb either, but, you know. So, yeah, we have the whole opening scene where the cops are all at a crime scene and Officer Albrecht is there, played by Ernie Hudson, and just touching everything in this crime scene without gloves. That always bugs me in movies like this. It's like, come on, watch CSI. You know they have to wear gloves.
he's just a beat cop. He doesn't know anything.
Yeah.
I've never noticed this, though, that when Sarah goes to visit the graves of the recently murdered Dravens, or I guess only one of them's a Draven, because it was a day before their wedding. Fuck, that sucks. But I've never noticed that when she goes to visit their graves, she's stealing a flower from like every grave she walks by. Have you ever noticed that?
No, I didn't even notice it this time.
That's funny. Well, it makes sense that I didn't notice it the first time I watched.
Yeah. But, yeah, we find out that Sarah and this cop end up with a bit of a relationship, bonding over the death of Shelley and Eric. And I have to say, I do like this kid. I don't know how else to put it. I thought that she did a great job.
Yeah, I think that her, without her, this movie lacks like an emotional core. Like, yeah. I get that like Eric has his whole, he's hurt because he got murdered and his wife got murdered and all that. But I think she's like one of those characters where being able to see it through her eyes and the fact that they meant something to her really lends a lot to the story, and even her relationship with her mom and how all that goes. And it's nice to have something else going on other than all the just murder.
Yeah, the body count in this movie was 31. Now, I'm wondering if that counts Eric Draven dying twice. Because yeah. I didn't make that count. I read that somewhere. Now, I have a question about how slowly the police department works. Why is there still crime scene tape up a year later when Sarah goes to visit the apartment, when she does end up finding Eric?
A really good question. Another thing that kind of irked me was that the apartment looked the exact same. You know, yeah. Nothing was touched, nothing was cleaned up. And how did that cat managed to live all that time in that empty apartment with no food or water or anything else?
That's another very good question. I never thought of that. I guess it's just, it's a scrappy kitty. It's out there eating out of dumpsters and stuff.
Like, I assume that the reason why everything was left unchanged is because, like, part of the story and part of the reason why they got killed is that Shelley was trying to, like, save the people from being evicted out of that, that building. And so my assumption is it's in, like, some sort of...
It's condemned or something.
Like, condemned, like, slum thing owned by this mobster. So it just seemed to me like it was probably the case that after they killed her, they just ousted everybody and just kept the building vacant and nobody, and it's like not taken care of, so nobody would have come to, like, the police put up the tape, but ultimately I feel like they would just tell whoever owns it, like, oh, we're done here, so you can take it down whenever you want. But they probably just never did.
Yeah, I guess so.
That would be my theory.
Yeah.
But I agree with Frank about the cat. I also feel like...
It would be feral if it was like...
It would
like...
be so feral. I mean, I guess if it's a condemned building, there might be a lot of mice, so maybe it went back to its wild roots.
There you go.
And it seems to rain a lot there, so I'm sure there's lots of standing water.
Yeah. Yeah, it, like, rains constantly in this movie. I mean, I know that's one of the lines, is it can't rain all the time, but I didn't know Detroit was that rainy of a city.
Yeah, me neither. I was also, like, what is... Do they ever tell you what the date is? Is it modern times, or is this in some futuristic world? Like, what kind of Detroit are we looking at? It seems almost post-apocalyptic.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it almost seems like the bleak future that Demolition Man had in the opening scene, where it's like, that's what they thought 3 years in the future looked like, so it might be that. But it does also have that timeless quality. Like, even we were saying that with Blade, where it's just kind of like you can't quite tell what year it is. I feel like that's kind of the idea here. It's gothic, but it's heavy metal, Nine Inch Nails playing, you know, so it's super goth.
Yeah. It is funny that you mention that the director was a music video director, because this movie looks like every 90s nu metal music video I ever watched in my life.
Yeah. Well, okay, I have to ask. I mean, is this movie good? I mean, you know, well, like, it's... I know that's usually a question for the end, but, you know, like, you look at something like Heath Ledger getting his posthumous Oscar for playing the Joker, and you look at that and it's like, did he do really well? Or is it just because of everything that, you know, it's just because Heath Ledger was another member of the 28 Club? I think that's what they call it. Brandon Lee and Janis Joplin and Kurt Cobain, all the people that die at 28. But
it's actually 27.
27.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, Brandon Lee was 28. Close enough.
Yeah, close enough.
Yeah, he celebrated his 28th birthday while on the set of this movie. And he couldn't eat any of the cake and ice cream because he was on a strict diet. He had lost 40 pounds for the role. I don't know how big he used to be. I don't know him in anything else. But, yeah, he celebrated his 28th birthday while on the set. So it was really close.
I mean, I kind of had the same question as you, Sean. And, like looking, going, like, I'll have my reviews later. But looking at them, I mean, for the most part, they're all glowing.
Yeah.
But the few detractors that show up all reference, like, that question. Is the movie actually good, or has the tragedy just catapulted it to cult status?
Exactly.
And I mean, I can't even really say, because, like, to my mind, I don't want to speak ill of the dead, but I don't know if Brandon Lee was a good actor. Like, yeah. He's kind of, like, in the realm of, like, River Phoenix to me. People talk about River Phoenix... Like he was like
gonna
the
be
next
the next
coming,
great thing.
Like
yeah,
like the next whatever. And I don't know. Like, because I didn't watch those movies growing up. I have no idea.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I guess it could have been, but it's like, even watching this movie, I mean, like,
I like his performance, but he doesn't do a lot. I mean, it's not
like
Heath Ledger's Joker.
Yeah, and I was trying to, like, because they're very similar, I compared the two, and I'm like, The Dark Knight would have been as amazing and as like well reviewed as it was, whether or not Heath Ledger died or not.
Yeah.
His death is made more tragic, almost like seeing how great the performance was. Whereas yeah. Brandon Lee, I feel like it's just sad that he died, but I don't necessarily know that, like, I don't necessarily know if I take his performance in The Crow, am I like, oh, this guy could have been like an Oscar worthy performer. Yeah, like,
James
I don't know.
Dean.
Like,
James Dean again, you know, yeah. Like, because one part that I think of is the part where he's kind of having his psychological break, all his flashbacks as soon as he enters his apartment, and like he's, you know, simulating what happened by himself, and then like runs towards the window and then swings up on the bar and then lands with a, you know, superhero landing. But it's just like there's not a lot going on there because you've got all these music video cuts. Like you're watching a Nine Inch Nails video in that scene is what you're doing. You know, it's, I don't know. It's just, that's where it's like, well, yeah, he wasn't given a whole lot, but yeah, I just can't quite tell whether it's a great movie or whether it's the love of everything around the movie that makes me appreciate the final performance, yeah. You know, I don't know.
I mean, Frank will be the one to tell us at the end of the movie. I mean, I could also weigh in, but I think we'll save it for the full end.
Okay. Well, because okay, and so I mean, the whole movie does have a bit of a weird tone because you've got like creepy Micah and Top Dollar. You never actually hear his name, but that's Michael Wincott, who we saw in Robin Hood. But like, we've got the two of them that are just these weird, creepy, like their love making involves blood, doesn't it? Like, they're digging out eyes and eyeballs. Like, it's like you've got like, so they're vampires in a way, but I know they're not actually vampires. But then you've got like all the tweakers. You've got Tintin and T-Bird and Skank and Fun Boy, and it's just like they're all over the top. Watching this movie, I actually had subtitles on this time because I'm getting old and my hearing's going, but I never realized that when they do their little chant face to face, they're actually saying light it up, and I've never been able to understand what they're actually saying. So you've got all those over-the-top characters. Like, it really is only Sarah and Officer Albrecht that kind of ground this movie, because everything yeah. else around it is just wild banana sandwich bonkers. I mean,
yeah, like when we first meet Top Dollar, and I don't even know what that Asian girl's
Micah.
Name is.
Micah.
So Micah. And then you have like the dead girl in the bed, and they're like, oh, he's like, oh, I think we broke her. Yeah. And then later, and I don't know this to be true or not, but when he says that Micah is his sister, like they just drop that really casually later on. And it's like, what is going on here? Like, who are you people?
Well, yeah, like, I was wondering if that was legit or whether that was just to get a reaction out of the guy he was telling that to. But either way,
I have no idea. Yeah,
you know.
And then, like with Micah, I just don't know what her deal is. Like, she seems to have some sort. Like, she seems to be a witch. Is she a witch?
Maybe.
That's what I'm getting from her. I don't know.
Now, one thing that kind of tripped me out about this, because, you know, I guess I was so used to Blade, you know, whenever the fighting scenes were happening, I was thinking, oh, crap, these guys are going to do something crazy, something supernatural. But, oh, wait, no, they won't. They're regular people. The Crow is the supernatural one here with all the crazy powers and such. These are just regular old people. They're not vampires. They're not superheroes or anything like that, which makes it even weirder.
Yeah. You're really staticky on your end. I don't know what's...
I didn't know this. Can you hear me?
Yeah. We can hear you, but we've got a lot of noise.
Really?
Yeah. Can you hear
hello?
us?
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Can't hear us.
Can you hear me?
Hey, yeah.
I can't hear you.
Fuck.
Dang, and your mic sounds gorgeous.
Yeah.
we'll just type our questions to Frank.
Trying to figure it out here.
Hello.
Hello?
That didn't work.
No.
Okay. Oh, wait.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Okay, I hear you.
Okay. Weird. You sound much better, so that's awesome. So
that's good.
Okay.
Wait, Colin, maybe Brandon Lee found out we were talking about him badly. And, he probably got mad.
Yeah, the curse, the crow curse has jumped onto the podcast.
The one thing that I did think about Micah, though, when we first get introduced to her, because we do see her in the shower pretty much right away when we first get introduced, is the tattoo on her back and everything. I thought, oh, these were fringe people back in the mid-90s, right? Like,
yeah.
That's commonplace now, but the fact that she had a back tattoo, I mean, you know that was mid-90s. Ooh, look out for these people.
I will say, like, one of the kind of surprising things about the crow, about the movie in general, I think, is that if you just look at the feel of the movie and the aesthetic of the movie, I would have expected there to be a lot more like gratuitous nudity.
Yeah.
So I was very impressed that they kept it to like one boob.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not even the matching set, just one. Well, okay, let's talk about our quintet of evildoers, our rapists, our terrible people. In the opening, I was almost tempted to introduce you as like my fun boy to my Tintin or something like that, but I didn't think that was a good way to kick off the podcast. But okay, swallowing a bullet is that just reckless and stupid, or would that pass through you?
Good question.
I would think that it would just pass through, unless, because I mean the bullet's only gonna discharge if somebody hits the pin.
Yeah,
but I still don't
feel like I still don't feel like it would be ideal.
Yeah, so the one guy with the knives, which one was he? I forget.
That's Tintin.
Yes.
Yeah. I read that the actor actually trained with a knife expert to be able to do the stuff. Now, I don't think he was catching the knives himself. I mean, I guess it was Brandon Lee that was catching the knives, wasn't it?
Right.
I still like the one where he catches it, you know, slap between his hands. But yeah, I read that he trained with a knife guy so that he would like look legit while he was doing this part.
Mm-hmm. I have to say that I feel like the crow kind of runs like a Mortal Kombat style game where he's just like, it's just whatever you call it, the ladder.
Yeah, he's leveling up.
I feel like Tintin might be my favorite fight.
Yeah.
I like how that one ends. And I like how it starts too. I like that he just starts with him jumping into a pile of garbage and laughing.
Yeah. Well, have you ever noticed that everyone gets killed off in the order that they rape Shelley?
No, I didn't.
I haven't noticed, but that makes sense.
Yeah, see, it all lines up, right? He kills them in the order that they took their turn on Shelley. And so it's just, I thought that was kind of a neat way of doing it, but I'd never really noticed that before. But you're right, I think that his death is probably the best one out of all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A bone of contention I did have for the movie is when Eric shows up at the pawn shop. I can't remember what the guy's pawn, what that guy's name is, but
yeah,
when he walks
Gideon.
In,
that's
when,
right.
Gideon, yeah. When he walks in, he quotes The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe.
Yes.
Which I was like, come on, they're different birds.
Well,
you can't just like...
the irony of that, though, is none of the birds in this movie are crows. They are all ravens, because ravens are bigger.
Yeah.
Except for the one that attacks Micah. That one's a mechanical bird. But yeah, they used ravens. But he also doesn't quote the raven correctly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, he mixes up a couple of the words, and it's like, oh, you didn't even quote it right. But we all knew what you were talking about, thanks to The Simpsons.
Yeah. That's definitely where I heard it first.
Well, you know, and so that pawn shop, I will say, yeah, that's Gideon's Pawns and Loans. And I think that means it's time for Sponsorship Corner. So, launching it off of a fictional one, always on a lookout for product placements and movies. This week, The Crow is brought to you by Gideon's Pawns and Loans, Coors and Stroh's Beers, Ford Thunderbird. I mean, come on, they even named a character after the car. Prestige Jukeboxes, and one that my Googling has failed me so that I don't know if it's real, but Spring Bride Magazine, if that is a fake one, it's a very specific prop. And so, I mean, it just, I can't find anything, though, that tells me that Spring Bride Magazine is actually real. And Crown Royal Whiskey. However, the label is very deliberately ripped through that part of the name. So I don't think it's actually a sponsorship, but it's a very distinct bottle to use. Plus the fictional Maxi Dogs and Club Trash. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. Club Trash, I read, was it's an old cement factory that was used in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and it was used in Super Mario Brothers. So it's nice. Also in The Crow. It's kind of like the fire hall that we talked about back in Big Trouble in Little China. Big Trouble in Little China is really growing on me, I have to say. Since we've watched that one, I think back to it more fondly the more I think about it.
It was good. It was just weird, but it's a good... I would say that movie is more deserving of, like, true cult status along the lines of, like, kind of... It's almost like... It's not, like, Rocky Horror at all, but it's, like, kind of that kind of weirdness.
Yeah. So back to Gideon's Pawn Shop. I did read something that in that scene, Brandon Lee... Here's another part of the jinx set. Brandon Lee ended up cutting his hand on some of the fake glass. Like, it's breakaway glass, but he ended up cutting his hand, which is very rare. And so John Polito, who plays Gideon, said to him, you know, like, yo, you better be careful. You're going to end up dying on set. And it's like, what? Like, there's all these things. Yeah, like, I mean, you were talking about the weird serendipity that caused Brandon Lee to actually die. And it's just like, man, there were all these, like, premonition moments, too. Like, this set was jinxed, man. I'm surprised they ever made a sequel.
Well, I mean, there's probably... Maybe that's why all the sequels are so terrible.
Well, there's that, too.
I read that they wanted to do a reboot, and it was shut down in 2018 when the star dropped out. The star? Jason Momoa!
Yeah. I mean, yeah, to me, Jason Momoa is Jack to be the Crow.
Yeah.
And would he have shaved? Like,
that's a good question.
He didn't do it for Aquaman.
So, no. Like.
Okay, so let's talk a bit more about our bad guys, though, because we didn't give T-Bird's death enough respect. Because, you know, even though Tintin had all the knives sticking out of him at the end, T-Bird got to get exploded as he drove off the pier. That was another pretty good death, I think.
Yeah, I thought if you're ranking deaths, like, I don't even remember Fun Boy's death. I watched the movie twice. I don't remember how he dies.
Well,
ever.
He was the one that gets all the morphine injected into him, isn't he?
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the needles in his chest, yeah.
Yeah. Fun Boy is actually the guy that fired the gun that shot Brandon Lee. And so that's Michael Massey. And he took a year off acting after this movie. He was too traumatized. And he says that he never saw the film all the way up until he died a few years ago. And he had never actually watched the film because he just couldn't bring himself. Like, it's just, it's weird that... Like, on one hand, you do want to finish it. You want to honor the guy. But on the other hand, it's like, there's all this dark history. Like, the writer, he donated most of his earnings to charity because he felt like it was blood money. I don't know how you could come back to work after something like that.
Well, I mean, like, yeah. In retrospect, it's kind of like I said before, like, Paramount, after the accident, didn't want to distribute it.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of weird to think, like, it was Miramax that came to save the day, knowing what we know now about Miramax and Harvey Weinstein and all these guys. Like, they're not, like, you know, the most morally scrupulous human beings.
Which does shine quite a picture on the idea that they were the ones that saved it, absolutely. Like, it's just like,
oh, okay.
They cared about the buck. They knew that the publicity was going to make it a hit. Yeah.
Yeah, it was also kind of crazy. Like, I'm sure you, Sean, you have the DVD, but you did what you needed to do to get it.
I have this DVD.
Okay. But anyways, I was just gonna buy it digitally. And yeah. It's impossible. You can't buy it right now. It's not available on Google Play. It's not available on iTunes.
Really?
And I think it's because it's a Miramax movie. And so many Miramax movies after the Harvey Weinstein thing have gotten pulled. I ended up having to watch it on Amazon Prime channel. The Hollywood Suite channel had it. So that's how I watched it.
Huh. How did you watch it, Frank?
Yeah, that's... The way you said that kind of irked me, because I was able to find it on YouTube, straight up, which I find it funny how iTunes didn't have it, and Google didn't have it, and YouTube did.
That could be, it could also be like a Canadian-American, because YouTube, for me anyways, YouTube is the same as whatever's on the Google Play Store is on YouTube usually, so that's usually how I end up watching them, but. I might be wrong, and it might just be like an American versus Canadian licensing thing.
Yeah, like I can't watch a lot of SNL videos because they're always blocked in Canada. You know?
Really?
Yeah, we get weird like regional blocks on things.
Well, I know, because I've tried to watch some videos on YouTube and I can't because I'm not on certain grounds. But I would think something like SNL wouldn't be.
Yeah.
But
sometimes it depends on the link I click on, but yeah. Oh, I forgot something about Tintin. I want to say that it's quite a baller move that he was lighting his cigarette off a barrel fire. But I do want to ask, I mean, since we have an American on the show, are barrel fires more commonplace in the United States? Because I don't think I've ever seen a barrel fire in Edmonton. Like, not to, like, huddle around and keep warm.
Yeah, I actually don't think I've ever seen a barrel fire in real life. I've only seen it in the media.
Yeah.
I can't envision a place where a barrel fire would actually just be able to occur unabated. Like... There's definitely nowhere in Edmonton. Like even in the worst places in Edmonton, I can't foresee there being a barrel fire in a back alley.
No, not at all. I mean, and I don't even know how the average person would have access to those barrels. They're not usually just lying around.
Right.
It kind of makes me wonder how you start one in the first place. You know, without the whole can going to flames.
Yeah.
And disintegrate. Yeah.
And it would be like so toxic. Like I have to assume there's garbage in there. I have no idea. But like,
I don't know what they're
breathing
burning.
In plastic fumes and gasoline, and
yeah,
it's basically just cancer in a barrel. Probably it seems like.
Speaking of gasoline, I like in the pawn shop when he's pouring out the can that says gasoline on the side, but it's like a prepackaged can of gasoline. Do those exist? I only know about jerry cans, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I know a thing or two about generic products, you know, dealing with them in my job. I know we don't sell gasoline like that. Signature brand gasoline.
If it was lighter fluid, that would make more sense to me, but gasoline. And then he says, is that gasoline I smell? Well, what did the can say? It said gasoline.
Also, was there enough gasoline to cause that big of an explosion?
I don't know. I mean, like, when he decides to make the flaming crow symbol on the ground as well, he's got, like, a small can of lighter fluid for that. Yeah. There's no way he'd be able to make something that big there, either.
No. There's also no way he would be able to make something that accurate in the dark with gasoline.
Yeah.
Like, how are you keeping track? My wings would be like all over the place.
He's got his crow flying overhead, giving like crow vision on the scene. Yeah. Move a little to the left. Yeah, there you go.
That is badass though. That scene actually, I was like, oh, the Dark Knight Rises ripped that off completely.
Yeah. And
when Batman shows back up in Gotham and lights up that bat.
Yeah, for sure. Well, see, and that's why they reference the bat.
That's the first thing that came to my mind when I saw that, too.
Yeah. I've got a note here about the... I stuck his blades in all his major organs in alphabetical order. How did he know it was alphabetical?
I loved that, too, when I heard it. That made me laugh.
Did you notice that Top Dollar's sword looks just like Inigo Montoya's?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. I was wondering whether that was me.
Well, I thought it just looked like your, like, average pirate sword. I also was just like, that was another moment when I was like, who is this guy when he just opens up this closet of swords?
Yeah.
And then I was like, man, if we don't get a sword fight by the end of this movie, I'm going to be pissed. And we got like a 2-second one, so that was nice.
Yeah. But hey, it counts, right? Yeah, it's nothing like the big shootout in the conference room as he dives under the table and all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, like where everybody seems like they learned how to shoot at Stormtrooper school.
Yep.
Where it's like, how many rounds do you need to hit somebody here? And like half the time I couldn't even tell if he was shooting them or if they were just shooting each other in the crossfire.
Yeah.
The other line that I wrote down that I really like is when Skank is talking about what happened to T-Bird, and Top Dollar says, we should record this and play it back at half speed. Because he's all methed out or whatever.
Yeah.
I did notice that there was one scene. It's when Sarah goes to visit Darla at work, and she sits down at the bar, and the bartender gives her a drink. And says, here you go, kid, it's on the house. And then it cuts to Sarah, and you hear the bartender go, like, it's root beer. Yeah. And I was wondering whether that line was put in after the fact. Like, was that an ADR line where they're just like, oh, shit, we can't make them think that this kid is actually drinking beer.
I never even thought about that, but probably. They're probably like, we don't want to get sued, so let's just cover our ass.
That's the line, yeah. The, squeezing morphine out of her veins. I mean, we need the anti-drug message, and we need to make sure that we're not showing this 10-year-old drinking.
Yeah.
Okay, so we end up with, like, our big payoff with Top Dollar versus Eric, and we find out that Eric has his fun new trick of being able to give Top Dollar his 30 hours of pain. I think that would be a pretty darn good superpower to have, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, to just, like, give people, to just spread your own pain to somebody else.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you have to, like, charge yourself by getting hurt, then it's not so good.
That's true. That's true. The death beforehand was a little bit, something I don't want to do.
I think I would like it more if I could somehow dispense the collective pain of the world into somebody having to, like, experience it myself.
Yeah.
The one thing I found really odd about their final little showdown is that it's not until that moment that Top Dollar even outs himself as being anywhere, like, remotely responsible for what happened to Eric and Shelley.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's like Eric decides, you know what? Okay, well, now you're on the hit list. I have to kill you. And he pains him and does that epic, like, throws him on the gargoyle. And we get that epic scene of, like,
yeah.
I love how they show the gargoyle first so that you can see that the water is going through the mouth. And then Top Dollar falls on it. And then you get to see the blood coming out of the mouth.
Yeah.
That was a nice touch.
Yeah. And all these churches that have, like, a million stairs leading up to the top of the bell tower. I mean, it gave me serious, like, original Batman vibes, you know, like 1987 yeah. Batman vibes. I do like Top Dollar's line, though, of let me do an impression for you. Caw, caw, fuck, I'm dead. I've always loved that line. I don't know why.
I did also think it was weird that whatever the steeple or whatever was, you know, it just so happened to be sword worthy material.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a rule. If you're building a gothic church, you have to be able to have a place for a sword fight.
Yes,
it's in the bylaw.
Yeah.
But you know, during that scene, you know, I'm not sure whether the scene was funny to me or whether it was just like maybe they just gave up all of a sudden. Like when he gets shot and he realizes it's still there, he's like, ah, shit.
Yeah.
He realizes,
yeah.
I'm not vulnerable anymore. I actually have to work hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like, it's almost as if he's like, he was about to go and be and start laughing like I'll be like, ah! And then he's like, oh, fuck. And then he falls. But he's like, but the thing about it is he's actually a terrible fighter.
Yeah.
He's kind of like, he reminds me of like Superman. If Superman didn't, like, I think that the only reason that Superman is so great is because he's invulnerable and he's got all his superpowers. But if he lost all of that, like, he wouldn't be a great, he wouldn't necessarily be like a great fighter. Like, he wouldn't be, yeah, Batman or anything like that. He'd probably get his ass kicked because he can't, yeah, just bank on somebody breaking their hand on his body. Or in Eric's case, it's like he can't just bank on his hand growing back.
Yeah. But meanwhile, right, like, he tells the cop to stay behind him and then gets upset that I told you to stay behind me. It's like, well, you're both vulnerable now. Like, you know, why are you going to be a shield? Is it just because you don't want someone to die for you? Is that the only reason you're going to be all noble and go in front? Because, I mean, really, you're not going to stop anything either.
Yeah.
And speaking of which, I do like the bromance that they end up forming. That I like how Officer Albrecht kind of becomes the Commissioner Gordon to, you know, Eric Draven's Batman. You know, it's
yeah, like, I like that relationship a lot. I like the I really like the scene where Eric's in his house and they're kind of like, you know, he's like, realizes like, oh, he stayed with Shelley for the 30 hours she was in surgery and all that until she dies. I thought that was really,
yeah,
a nice scene.
You still have your hat on.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, like, why is he wearing the hat? He's walking around in like his underclothing. How did you forget to take your hat off? I don't know. I guess the shirt unbuttoned, so I guess you wouldn't have had to pull it over your head, but still, it's, the hat's the first thing coming off as far as I'm concerned. Cop hats, yeah, are not comfortable.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
I've got one more line that I wrote down that I really enjoyed. Where he says, guy shows up looking like a mime from hell. At least he didn't do that walking against the wind shit.
A mime from hell.
Yeah.
That would have been a good alternate title for this movie.
The mime from
hell. Or a good tagline.
Yeah. instead of the angel one that they did have. Yeah, he's the mime from hell, yeah, instead. Yeah. Well, there we go. That's The Crow. Now, Colin, Frank, on IMDb, it scored 7.6 out of 10. It has a Metascore of 71. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 83 on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 90%. But, Colin, those are just numbers.
What is Sean going to come up with?
Oh, I don't know. Like, Mind Meld, filling you with 30 hours of pain. Hit us with some reviews.
All right. Let's go to the Rotten Tomatoes. We'll start with Yash B, who says 4 out of 5 stars. The Crow is a movie surrounded in tragedy since Brandon Lee died on set, but it is also very impactful because Lee's performance in this movie shows a glimpse of the star he could have been. I think this is a slick, dark, and enjoyable action movie that mostly works because of the lead performance and visual style. As far as revenge flicks go, there isn't too much substance here, but the style makes up for it big time. Overall, this is one of the earlier examples of a darker comic book adaptation, and I think it is also very effective and unique one that I'm glad I checked out.
You weren't lying when they said that, you know, they're all going to be talking about the tragedies, aren't they?
I was going to say, almost, I tried to pick a few that didn't, but it's pretty hard to find one that doesn't mention it. This reviewer is Andy S. He says 3 out of 5 stars. If this movie hadn't been marked by the sad loss of its star, Brandon Lee, then I doubt it would have been the cult movie it's turned out to be. At best, it's mediocre. The story, plot, casting, and acting. It's also ruined by the fact that much of the outdoor scenes, that's in quotes, are obviously filmed in a very poor soundstage, and the sound is very poor. The best parts are where Lee actually talks about his love for his wife. These scenes are actually very touching and tender. There just isn't enough of them. The action scenes are actually quite good too, but at best it's just a second-rate gothic story.
Like I said, you know, like I said earlier, he just wasn't given a whole lot to work with, and so
yeah,
he's got a point. Like, you know, yeah, the, like you said, the bit in the apartment, it was a nice little scene, but we don't see enough of those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ted W. says 2.5 out of 5 stars. I'm really surprised that this movie sucked. I was waiting for I was waiting for 3 years to watch this movie and it disappointed. It's basically like a ripoff of Blade, and I think this movie came first, but maybe it's timing, but not my type of movie. I'll never watch it again.
Okay.
Now switching over to Google reviews, Vicky Richmond says 5 out of 5 stars. I saw this film 4 times in the space of a fortnight when it was released at the cinema. For people who don't know, a fortnight, I believe, is 2 weeks. Despite the somewhat weak storyline, it was irresistible to an impressionable teenager who had just discovered rock music. Brandon Lee was a great actor. He played the part well, and his death was a tragedy that probably helped to elevate the film to cult status. I still watch it once every couple of years, and I still cry over it, despite feeling like a complete sap, but the soundtrack is fabulous, and the cast were well-chosen, an enduring winner.
Okay. I will say, it's 4 score that I've never understood. 4 score and 7 years ago. What is that?
I think a score is 10. A score is a decade, I'm pretty sure.
Actually, a score is 20.
Is it?
Okay.
Oh,
4 score would be 80.
80 years?
And 7. So 87 years.
Okay.
Oh, there we go. I've learned something. Frank has taught me something
there
today.
We go.
Thank you.
I will insert the More You Know jingle.
Yes, there
might
we go.
It might only apply to Canadians, because I imagine if you know Lincoln's address, you probably learned that in school. I didn't.
Yeah. Megan Erdman says, I was trying to find something to watch on Netflix and came across The Crow. I was like, I haven't seen this in a while. Why not watch it again? And that's exactly what I did. The last time I saw this movie when I was about 10 or 11 years old, so about 7-ish years ago, seeing it again reminded me of how much I loved it. It is and always will be one of my favorite movies. Rest in peace, Brandon Lee. I absolutely loved him in this movie.
Okay.
Let's see.
10 or 11. I mean, I was at least a teenager.
Yeah, this is the last one. Yeah. Oh, this is a great name. Big C Puppet Anime Fan says,
okay.
I love this darn film so much. One of the emotional superhero comic movies. Okay, keep track in your mind of this list. One of the emotional superhero comic movies with Avengers Infinity War, Avengers Endgame, Glass, Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, Spider-Man 3, and Logan.
So okay.
I'll give you Logan and I'll give you Endgame, but I'm not giving you Infinity War. I haven't seen Glass, so maybe the jury's out, but I definitely cannot give
I've heard bad things.
I can definitely not give you Batman vs. Superman as an emotional comic movie. Yeah.
Martha!
Sorry. No. This movie gave me a lot of nostalgia when I first saw this. R.I.P. Brandon Lee. Sad face. I also felt disappointed when they canceled the Crow remake with Jason Momoa and Corin Hardy. Sad face. This movie is a lot better than City of Angels.
Now, the Crow City of Angels or Nicolas Cage's City of Angels?
They don't say. I'm going to assume The Crow, but who knows? I gave The Crow 100 out of 10 happy face.
Okay. Right on. So like I said, 7.6 and 71 on IMDb and 83 and 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm going to ask it again, and I'll throw it over to Frank. Frank, is this movie good?
You know, since you asked that question, I've kind of been wondering that myself. You know, as I watched it, I will admit, I enjoyed it. You know, I did think there were a lot of cool effects for its time, including the car explosion and things like that. But I will say this, I was waiting till the end of the film because I was waiting for an Eric and Shelley reunion. And I knew we likely weren't going to get it. I just waited and waited and Shelley was like, yes! So really, that was the only real good point for me, because I wanted that to happen and it did. You know? So that's why I'm glad the movie ended the way it did. But other than that, you know, kind of is a what if, you know, how do we know what Brandon Lee would have been if that freak accident didn't happen and if this movie wasn't as big of a success due to it.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what I've been thinking about ever since you guys brought that up. And really, you don't know. I mean, you know, in terms of the movie being good, I'd probably say,
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, the story could be kind of wonky, and really the effects could be kind of too. But, I mean, it did the job.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very straightforward revenge story with electric guitar playing, you know? So what about you, Colin, on this viewing? What did you think of The Crow?
Okay, I'll answer this in two parts.
Okay.
Is it a good movie? No. Okay. Do I like it? Yes. This okay. movie, like, it just hits all the things I like. I love emo shit. I love My Chemical Romance. I love all those things. Like, I like vampires. I like... Like, this movie, the vibe that this movie most closely to me resembles is, I don't know if you guys have ever seen the movie Queen of the Damned. It's yep. also, it's the last movie that Aaliyah ever did, so it also has, like, yeah. a tragic thing. But it's similar, it's very similar in tone to that movie, where it's just, like, it's so emo. But the added benefit of The Crow is it has the fun violence and the comic book aspect and that kind of stuff. I don't know. I think The Crow as a concept is really cool. I would have liked to see, I mean, I know they made more movies, and I remember trying to watch some of them and trying to watch the TV show, and they were just really, really bad. But I like this movie, even though I don't think it's like the masterpiece that some people look at it as. Like, even when I saw the Rotten Tomato reviews, for it to have, it has like, what, 90 something percent as an audience?
Yeah, yeah.
I was surprised at that, because to me it's not, like, it's a fun movie, and it's still so niche that I don't think it would be, like, I still don't think it's, like, mainstream, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't think, like, a mainstream viewer would watch this movie and really think anything of it.
Yeah, but more of them probably did because...
More of them probably did because of the hype, Brandon, yeah. of the Brandon Lee thing, and so...
Makes total sense.
Yeah, I do agree with everyone who says that it was more likely the tragedy that elevated this movie to the status that it has than its actual, like, merit as a film, unfortunately.
Yeah.
That's not to say it's not an enjoyable watch. It definitely is. But it's just, like, if I had to compare it to another movie, I would say it's, like, on the verge of, you know, it's somewhere around, like, Sin City. Like, yeah. those middle, or, like, maybe, like, it'd be around, to me, The Spirit. Like, if you've seen yeah. that movie with, like, Gabriel yeah, okay, Mock, yeah. like, I think those two movies are very similar. I like them both, but I still think The Spirit is almost, like, the case study of what could have been, I think. If Brandon Lee hadn't died and hadn't gone on to any, like, considerable success, we don't necessarily know, but I think The Crow might be looked at the same way as The Spirit, whereas it's kind of like, it's just that middle of the road, like, oh, nobody, it's not Batman, especially in the 90s, it's not Batman or Superman, so, like, comics book-wise, the draw isn't there.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, yeah, it really is just the death of Brandon Lee that I think brought people to the theaters of this movie to just be like, oh, man, like, we have to see what this... But then again, I don't really understand the mystique of Brandon Lee, or what he meant to people, or what his status was at the time of filming this movie.
It wasn't very big. I mean, yeah. they were even unsure about casting Brandon Lee because he had been, he was kind of a B movie star before yeah. this movie came out. And mm-hmm. so, I mean, they were casting for a B movie. I mean, you can kind of see that in the side characters in a way, is that it's almost like right. They were going cartoony, I mean.
Mm-hmm. And again, even the idea that it was meant to be a made-for-TV movie, like, I think that does come across a lot, yeah. a lot yeah. when you watch this movie. And so it's just kind of, I don't know, it's interesting.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, it plays like a music video, so there's that idea too. I mean, you know, so it's, yeah, I see this movie as being a very... it's almost the very definition of rose-colored glasses is how people watch this movie. Is that, yeah, it's that mystique of Brandon Lee. It's if you look past that, and I didn't realize that until this viewing, because it's been a long enough time since the hype around it was there, that watching it this time, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, it's a very simple movie. There's very little substance. It's all flash. It's flash and no substance. And it's kind of like, oh, okay, it's not a great movie, but I do still love the shit out of this movie. Because it was so important to me when I was a teenager, when I was listening to Nine Inch Nails on the regular. You know, it's like, you know, that's kind of how I feel. You know, I had my little emo phase. I was never really all in black all the time or anything, but you know, I went through my music phase of emo, and this holds a special place in my heart because of those couple years in high school where I was a depressed kid, you know?
I mean, like, anybody who's, like, probably, like, from between, like, my age to your age, Sean, like, anybody who was in probably, like, junior high to high school, like, you know, grade six or, like, probably, like, late elementary to, like, high school, like, The Crow, like, even the aesthetic of The Crow, like, he just looks so cool.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that's so enduring about The Crow is, like, I hadn't even watched the movie, but I had seen a million pictures of The Crow or like comics and action figures and stuff. And every time I'm like, man, like that guy looks awesome. Like he looks so cool. Like,
there's just
something about him that looks cool.
Yeah. And for like 4 or 5 years after this movie came out, I mean, every Halloween you would see a few crows out there when you were out partying, you know, it was... Yeah, it's a cool makeup. He looks cool, and yeah, it's a good look to duplicate.
Yeah,
I don't know. My son just came up yesterday. He comes upstairs, and I'm standing there, and he's wearing like a long black trench coat and sunglasses that he had just bought. And it's like, okay, so he's going as Neo for Halloween, right? and I'm like, you know, which also, I mean, you know, The Matrix is also kind of emo in a way, you know, and I remember, you know, The Crow and The Matrix, I mean, they were all kind of close to each other within a few years of each other, at least. But yeah, I mean, I asked him whether he was going to grow a beard and go as like current Neo or whether he was going to go as babyface Neo because instead of John Wick Neo. But anyway, off on a tangent. No, but I know exactly what you mean, is that, you know, it was very cool makeup. Actually, I did read, here's another fun fact. I read that Brandon Lee hated the makeup when it was applied to him, like just before he was filming. So they taught him how to do the makeup, and he would apply it the night before and then sleep in it so that when he woke up, it had that weathered look to it. And so it's like, yeah, all the makeup in the movie was actually done by Brandon Lee because... But can you imagine sleeping in that face? Like, I hope he had like
hell, that's got to be hell on your pores. I know, like, whenever we do or whenever I've done, like, a play and that kind of stuff, as soon as it's done, I've got my makeup, like, scrubbers on.
Yep.
Like,
yeah.
That stuff just clogs your face.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, like what was his pillowcase budget as well is the other question.
Because he'd be the problem using, I went.
Yeah, he'd be using some sort of like oil based or something to keep it on there, and it's like that shit's not going to come out of pillowcases. Yeah, so I think if I had to rate this movie, I would probably go somewhere in the mid 60s range. You know, I like the movie. But I will tell anyone that has never seen this movie that they should see this movie. Because even with Frank not seeing it, when I sent the movie suggestion out to him, you know, I said, it's great. You'll love it. It's a good movie. And, I mean, I think, I don't know. Did you at least still enjoy the watch, though, Frank? Even if it just seems very plain? Like, you know, it's still a fun watch, right?
Yes. Yes, I agree to that. I will admit it was fun to watch him get revenge. I love watching that basis of it, you know. Like when something bad happens or one of the goons, I liked it. I laughed at some of the funny parts, and I ultimately enjoyed the ending when him and Shelby were reunited. Like I said, I waited for that. I was hoping it would come, and part of me was like, nah, they're not going to do it. They don't give people good endings like that, do they? But then it's like, no, they did. So yes, I did enjoy it very much.
Yeah. At least they made all the bad guys so unlikable that you're actually cheering for them all to die.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. That is The Crow, and that's our show for this week. Oh boy, a big thank you to our returning guest, his hat trick on our show, Mr. Frank Driscoll. Frank, give everybody a lowdown of where they can find you online, where they can find your show.
Well, the podcast is called Frankfully Honest. There are new episodes every Thursday at 8 a.m. Eastern, 5 a.m. Pacific time. And it's a very short program, so if you don't like it, it'll be over before you know it. And also, you can follow our program both on Instagram and Twitter at FrankfullyCast.
Right on. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out is, well, tell your friends, because word of mouth is so important for a podcast trying to find an audience. We're not celebrities like that damn dirty Conan O'Brien, so we need word of mouth to help us build a bigger listener base. Or if you want to go above and beyond, you can go to whatever app it is you listen to your podcasts on and give us 5 stars, give us 10 stars, give us 100 stars. It doesn't matter what you say in the reviews with those copious amounts of stars, but it's those 5 stars and a review that just help drive us up the charts and help us get noticed. Or one other way you can help us out, if you want to help us out financially, help us keep the show running, you can go to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and become part of our Patreon family and get a shout out on our show, just like executive producer Joshua Blum.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com. There you can find links to all of our podcast episodes, as well as our biographies, as well as our social media handles. We have Instagram, we have Twitter, we have Facebook. Go on there, give us some likes, give us some comments, give us some shares. If you want to email us, you can do so at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show, like Twister, which was recommended to us by my cousin Cameron. So if you want to be like Cameron, drop us an email, let us know what movie you want to watch, and we'll watch it for you and then talk about it, maybe with Frank again.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening. And join us next week when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.